I forbid. Today I will come out to work at the University of Virginia before I graduated last year. Before my talk, I will present my graduate letter to the Chevalier for his chance to forget. And also, I will present the honorary committee for offering me the opportunity to take a talk here. I want to start with the history about how we read, because it is one of the most important motivations for starting the mission from the senior writers. The story of Tommy Ray started back to the early 20th century after the invasion of electric stove. With electric stove, people found that our atmosphere is ionized by a mysterious ionic emitting salt. At that time, most of the community knew that the salt is probably the radioactive element on the ground. So, in order to figure out if the salt is indeed the radioactive element on the ground, we would have to carry out a series of new experiments to measure ionization rate of atmosphere. Here in the table is a result from one of his blue slides. So if you look at the data, you'll find that below 500 meters, the ionization rate do decrease with the altitude, which is consistent with the argument about radioactive elements. But the way you go to higher altitude, the ionization rate actually increases by a bigger with the altitude, which implies, however, salt is actually gradual reading. Later, we can have further show that the ionization rate of atmosphere actually done well with salt activity, which then excludes our stand of radiation salt. Then our radiation for this salt just become useful until now. The idea that silver was to be the cosmic ray of radiation was first proposed by Paul and Zerlich, based on the energy values. But to establish silver arrangements and cosmic ray accelerators, of course, the single energy argument is not enough. And more importantly, we need to show that energetic particles could be accelerated in the supernova remnants, and their spectra are also consistent with the observed cosmic spectrum. Energetic electrons have been identified in supernova remnants through the detection of synchrotron radio and X-ray emission back through the 1950s and 80s. Evidence for energetic photons in supernova remnants have been revealed only until recently through the Gabriel operation. Now let's look at the gamma spectra from several well-known supernova remnants. Based on the spectral shape, they seem to go into three different groups. But I'm not trying to say that this will be the evolution effect of supernova remnants. So first, the first group is the middle-aged supernova remnants, which are also found to be impacting the major cloud. Their gamma spectra is hit in the G wave and seems to favor a hydraulic operation. And the second group is the young shell type supernova remnants, whose spectra is big in kilogram and seems to have large components from the electronic origin. The last group is the historically young supernova remnants. So in this talk, I will focus on the middle-aged supernova remnants because their gamma emission are more consistent with a new primary shape with the hydraulic origin. So there are two pieces of information to support that the gamma emission from these remnants are probably higher than this. First, the low-energy spectra shows a sharp rising feature around 100 MeV, which is consistent with the characteristic high amount signature from the nuclear primary tip. And secondly, it's actually hard to use both Bremsstrom and even tandem emission mechanics to fit the spectra here in typical conditions. In the energy part, the spectra shows a smooth transition from the G-V band to the T-V band, which implies that the G-V emission and T-V emission are probably come from the same emission component, all have similar physical origin. So based on the spectral shape, we can get two implications. Of course, that the gamma emission is probably dominated by primary, and next, the G-V emission and T-V emission are probably come from the same emission component, all have similar physical origin. Next, let's look at the image morphology. So here in the left figure, the green contour is the radio data from VLA and the color map is the perpendicular to the GV emission. Let's focus on the panel for IC243. In this panel, the black cross is the position with OH meter detection, which is a good indicator for nuclear power interaction. So if you look at the data here, you found that the GV black region is spatially coincident with the major power interaction region. Well, the radio bright region, however, is not well correlated with the gamma emission region. Now let's move to the red figure. So here, in this figure, the gray area is the organization with shop, sales shop. And the different symbols here are controlled of the emission from several different government emissions. So basically, you see the similar picture. So here, you can look at the TV emission from Fermi and Erie. It actually strictly overlaps with the PV emission from Barrett and Maggie. And at the same time, the Montgomery emission region is strictly coincidental with the molecular topping catching region. So based on the living morphology, we could get three implications. So first, the TV and PV emission are strictly correlated with each other. And at the same time, they are strictly coincident with the molecular topping catching region. But the really emission, however, is now we have correlated with the gamma emission. So in the previous slide, a few slides, I talked about operation, and next I will talk about how to explain the operation, especially in the molecular power solution. So far, two scenarios have been proposed to explain the solution between the molecular power region and gamma emission region. The first scenario is the staging scenario, which focuses on hydro estate from random. So basically, particles accelerated as you know around the shockwave. When the energy are high enough, they can escape from remnants. When the energetic particle then reach the molecular pump, they can interact with the particle in the molecular pump and then produce enhanced time emission. Another scenario is the direct interaction scenario, which focuses on the direct delivery between the supernova remnant shock and the molecular pump. Before I talk about the direct interaction scenario in detail, which is also what I have focused on, I would like to point out the escaping scenario focuses on particle escape from remnant and also particle in the upstream region of shock front, while the direct interaction scenario focuses on particle accumulated in the downstream region. In many situations, actually, usually in both of them. So in future, a model with combined of both scenarios will be needed. That's something that will be worked. So now let's move back to the direct interaction scenario. So in 2010, Jiang et al. First used the crash power model to extend the gamma emission from remnants like W44 and W43. So in the paper, we consider young remnants in the set of tail phase with the fast shock. Then we started the interaction between this fast shock and the dense molecular pump. So when this fast shock ran into a dense molecular pump, the shock will be slowed down and then become radiative. For radiative shock, that shock will form behind the shock front. And due to the high density and magnetic field in this radiative shock, it will then become the ideal site for both synchrotron radio emission and ion decay gamma emission. So this model will explain why the molecular power region is correlated with this gamma emission region. But the one issue of the model is that based on the model, the radio emission should also trace this radiative shock. So it should also trace the molecular pump behind the region. But that's not what we see with remnants like SA443, which I have already shown you before. So this motivates us to extend the idea to radiative supernova remnants. So we consider radiative supernova remnants with already and the dense shell behind the shock front, which is shown by the dark gray arrow here. So the shell itself could produce significant amount of radio and gamma emission. We then consider the interaction between this dense shell and the dense molecular pump. This interaction will produce a radio of, with even higher density and magnetic field. So this interaction region could also produce a large amount of gamma emission. And at the same time, we are still getting radio emission from this interaction region. However, the possibility of surprise due to maybe stronger absorption of energy loss. So we end up with a picture that the gamma emission trace both the radiative shell and also the molecular part of the interaction region. While the radio emission only traces the radiative shell. So this new picture explains the discrepancy between the radio and the gamma ray morphology. Here, I would like to point out that in our calculation, we didn't consider emission from the unshot cloud here, which could possibly be illuminated by the escaping cosmic particles. So we then use this model and try to fit the data for SA443, and this is what we get. So in this calculation, we use the steady state of negative self-acceleration spectrum, plus the existential cutoff to account for the limited acceleration time of particles. So clearly, you can see that the existential cutoff is not a good approximation for the particle acceleration process, and it doesn't produce the period emission here. And this motivates us to further derive a time-dependent solution for the negative shock acceleration. In our calculation, we assume test particle mainly because shocks in this new emission parameters are slow shocks, so we're seeing a nonlinear. So we think the nonlinear impact may not be very important. So before I show you the result spectrum we get from this time-dependent solution, I would first like to talk about how can you obtain the spectrum intuitively. So basically, if you consider a very simple picture with particle bouncing and back and forth around the shock front with those electrons and diffusion, and every time the particle move across the shock front, it will gain some energy. And every time the particle enters the downstream ring, it has some chance to escape from the system. Then if you look at the detail, you will get a simple equation like this. So in this equation, F1, P1 are the initial phase space density and momentum. F2, P2 is the final phase space density and momentum after the acceleration. So the phase space density times the momentum to the second power is the proportion to your number density. So based on this simple equation, you can make a plot like here with the horizontal axis at the logarithmic of momentum and the vertical axis at the logarithmic of phase-space density times the momentum to the fourth power. Then the diffusive shock acceleration process works similarly like a horizontal shape. So far in the discussion, I have seen that particle, so basically this is your input particle, and after some acceleration time, it will simply shift here. So far in the discussion, I have assumed the particle is injected instantaneously. So what will happen if you continuously inject particle with the same spectrum and also with the same rate? So basically this is what you will get. You will get a group of spectrum with different amount of shape. And your shape amount is actually linearly proportional to your acceleration time. And then you can imagine what's the result spectrum of all the cumulative particles looks like. So basically, in the low end part and also in the high end part, your result spectrum will roughly follow your input particle spectrum. And in this transition region, your result spectrum will show a particle. And you will define critical momentum. But below the critical momentum, the particle already reached a steady state, and spectral shape will no longer change with time. Well, above this critical momentum, the spectral will still evolve with time because if the evolution will increase the time, this growth of spectrum will just increase in this direction, and spectral shape here will change accordingly. So here is what we get. So the left figure is for energy independent diffusion, and the right figure is for energy dependent diffusion. So basically, so in this figure, the black line is our input particle spectrum, which we assume is the cosmic Earth spectrum. So for the rest of light, it's a spectrum of a different acceleration time. So if the shape of spectral shape is just like what I mentioned before. So in the low energy and tiny part, spectral shape just follow your input cosmic Earth spectral. Now in the transition region, it's just a short particle which is consistent with steady state spectrum. For the energy-dependent diffusion, the main difference is having a tiny part. So basically, above the critical momentum, the spectrum no longer recovers or into the cosmic ray spectrum like for the energy-dependent case. Instead, it shows a spectral hardening and subsequent spectrum. It shows spectral steepening and subsequent spectral hardening here. If you assume the diffusion to equation cut out the proportion to the momentum with sigma power, then this spectral hardening here will exactly be half sigma. So, we then use this time-dependent solution to fit the data from high frequency really good. So now we can fit the data from T-Rebound out with the T-Rebound pretty well. And this fitting is for energy independent diffusion. And the relative fit for the energy dependent diffusion. So, yeah, this is what we got. So basically, we got spectral hardening. And this hardening depending on how the diffusion depends on the momentum. and around the district of Tabuk 44. In the end, I would like to mention that all the paintings I show here are reliable paintings and not need to be the best paint. Because in the calculation, we only consider the time we take. But in the drawing part of the grant, we still have some contribution. Okay, so in the end, it's summary and here to work. There are few things I would like to emphasize. So, just basically apply the new shadow sound interaction model of the sound radiation supernova, which will extend the radio and ground recording. And then I talk about this time dependent solution. And one interesting feature for this new solution that if the deterrent coefficient has a strong dependence on energy, then we will in fact say a spectrum maybe around several hundred of GeV. But I have to say that in this calculation, we didn't take into account the particle escaping. So if the energy particle will escape from the system, then the spectrum may not be as obvious as I showed you before. And next, in our calculation, we consider the reacceleration of the existing cosmic ray in the ambient medium. While from the young language, people usually assume that the same particle is extracted from the thermal population. But if our calculation is right, it means there is a transition for the same particle, which is from the thermal injection to the ray existing cosmic ray. And if this is true, we could ask ourselves a few questions like, when does this transition happen? And does it happen to all supernova remnants? And also, can we say this transition moderation? And in the end, as I mentioned before, we need a model with the combination of both scenarios. If you look at literature for remnants like IC43, W44, there is faith in both the escaping scenario and the direct interaction scenario. And there is actually a discrepancy between them. Basically, for the escaping scenario, it has a low energy cutoff because only half the particle can escape from the remnant. But while for the direct interaction scenario, it has high energy cutoff, which is due to the limited accelerated time. And if you look at the literature for the escaping scenario, they usually assume a low cutoff about 1 dB, while for the direct interaction scenario, they usually assume a high energy cutoff, which is about maybe 100 dB. So there is clearly some difference. Discrepancy there, which is still going to be investigated in the future.
Thank you for your excellent real progress. Any quick questions before we move on?
So, the good question is, I don't understand what happens to the radio particles. Why isn't there any radio emission associated with them?
Yeah, so...
What happens to the electrons?
Yeah, that's a good question, but I do not have a good answer for that. So, because for the radio emission wave, it's assuming the radio emission from the interaction region might be low, but the calculation is actually not. There are many uncertainties. So for the shell part, it's, the calculation is pretty straightforward, and also the ionization rate is probably 40 nanometers. But in the induction region, it involves the slow shell, and also the ionization rate is probably partially ionized, so there are a lot of uncertainties which is not very easy to deal with. So in our paper, we actually only did the calculation for the ground part. We didn't actually do the radio calculation for that for three. Something we are thinking to working on right now is that, so based on this picture, if we do not consider the molecular interaction, we just consider radiation environment, we still suppose to shape, say, both the radio emission and ground emission from purely radiation environment, even if it's not impacting the different plants. And there is a remnant we think which going to this category, we think it might S147 may going to this category, so we are trying to work on that. So we think basically you can maybe use pure shell emission to take both the radio and down to the S143. So far I don't have a good answer for that for the radio.
Okay, let's thank everyone again.